Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Kate Woda, producer of the show. Pharma Talk Radio is a nonprofit program to disseminate helpful information to those in life sciences, and in particular drug development. And this, of course, always includes patient advocacy communities. When I am not working with Pharma Talk Radio, I head up content and direction for Immuno-Oncology 360 and Rational Combinations 360 at the Conference Forum. For more information on these events, please visit www.theconferenceforum.org. Today's show features a talk previously delivered at the 5th Annual IO 360 2018 program by Dr. Corey Langer, Director of Thoracic Oncology and Professor of Medicine for the Perelman Center for Advanced Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Langer presented data on Keytruda in combination with chemotherapy in non-small cell lung cancer.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here to talk to this august crowd. I'm actually going to drill down into a very specific study, but I think it's an important template for what we're doing in general, not just in lung cancer, but in other solid tumors, particularly as we start combining checkpoint inhibitors with more conventional platform regimens. So I think most of you are familiar with at least the original data. This is a update that I had the privilege of presenting at World Lung in Japan just 3 months ago, and I'll talk a little bit more about the implications of this study beyond what I presented then, and happily answer any questions regarding lung cancer, which is my area of expertise. Do not ask me anything about melanoma or colorectal cancer, any organ system that begins below the diaphragm. Keynote-021G looked specifically at PEM-CARBO, one of our platform regimens, in non-squamous non-small cell with or without pembrolizumab. Again, our disclosures, as an academic, I have to do this, and as you can see, I'm guilty of pharmaceutical promiscuity. I play absolutely no favorites. Rationale, platinum-based doublets, of course, have been the standard of care for first-line treatment advanced non-small cell in those without genetic targetable aberration. So that's roughly about 70 to 80% of all our advanced non-small cell patients. Monotherapy, of course, with anti-PD-1, specifically with pembrolizumab, has demonstrated survival benefit compared to standard chemotherapy frontline in those with PD-L1 expression 50% or higher. So if you look at that overall population, that's roughly 30% of our patients. And docetaxel has proven inferior to pembro and really all the other PD-1 and PD-L1 inhibitors in this in the second-line setting. For pembro, that's specifically in those with PD-L1 expression 1% or higher. Chemo can mediate the immunologic effects, and combining chemo with anti-PD-1 immunotherapy can yield synergistic anti-tumor effects, and this is really the rationale for proceeding with such a trial. Keynote-021 was a much larger study looking at various combinations of pembrolizumab with chemo doublets as well as target agents and ipilimumab as well. So this was a single cohort of that trial, a randomized phase 2 that looked at PEM-CARBO alone with or without pembro. Primary analysis was actually presented a year and a half ago at ESMO, which time we observed a significant improvement in response rate, nearly doubling from 29% to 55%. The hazard ratio for survival, however, at that point was not terribly impressive. It was 0.9 with a p-value of 0.39. Last year at ASCO, Vali Papadimitrakopoulou from MD Anderson on a poster discussion showed a more updated analysis at 14.5 months, which confirmed the previous identified improvement in both response rate and PFS. And note that that hazard ratio for survival had improved from 0.9 to 0.69 with a p-value of 0.13. And toxicity was manageable and clearly safe in all of these analyses. And it was based on these data that pembro plus the PEM-CARBO combination actually received a conditional accelerated approval from the FDA. And I have to confess, personally, I had abject ambivalence. It was Randomized phase 2 data was only 120 patients. We did not have survival. We had not yet seen the phase 3 study, and the phase 3 results had not yet been reported. So it was a bold move, and certainly many of my colleagues, to be blunt, cast aspersions on that decision. So this presentation, really these are the most up-to-date data, look at 5 additional months of follow-up, so median follow-up now of 1.5 years, much more mature data. So the rationale and the schema are shown here, pretty standard of PEM-carbo. Note that the pemetrexed dose is standard at 500 per meter squared, with carbo actually attenuated AUC of 5, plus or minus pembrolizumab given at a flat dose of 200 milligrams every 3 weeks for 2 years. Eligibility, non-squamous, non-small cell. Again, if you do the math, that's a roughly 60-70% of our advanced disease population. No activating EGFR mutation or ALK translocation. It was independent of PD-L1 status, though participants needed to provide tissue for that sort of analysis. They had to have good performance status in virtually all of these trials. In non-small cell, have been done in good PS patients. Brain mets were allowed as long as they had been treated. And, of course, the usual caveats regarding immunotherapy. No antecedent interstitial lung disease or pneumonitis or any other autoimmune condition requiring steroids. Primary endpoint was response rate, key secondary endpoint PFS, and actually survival was an additional endpoint, but not primary. Pemetrexed was continued ad infinitum, permitted as maintenance therapy in the absence of disease progression or intolerability, and that's based on prior randomized trials, including the Paramount trial, that showed that this yielded a survival benefit. And the control arm could cross over to single-agent pembro at the time of progression. This was actually built into the study, and hence OS was not a primary endpoint. So here's the CONSORT diagram, the disposition, 219 patients screened, 123 randomly allocated. You can see that this was a one-to-one distribution. Note that in the pembro arm, maintenance pemetrexed commenced in 85% of patients, in the control arm in about 68%. If we look at those are ongoing, this is as of last summer, nearly a quarter of those in the experimental arm were still on treatment on the original trial, 14% on the control arm. Of note, in the control arm, 25 out of the 63 crossed over to pembro on study. An additional 15 received PD-L1 or PD-1 inhibitors outside of the crossover. So if you do the math, that's three-quarters of patients who were eligible for crossover actually received immunotherapy on that arm. And you can see the main reasons why treatment was discontinued in that arm. This is the array of agents that were given outside the crossover, and predominantly Nevo, but also Pembro, Atezo, Durva, and unspecified anti-PD-1. If you look at the experimental or investigational arm, and the 27% received subsequent anti-PD-1 or PD-L1 therapy, and again, you can see the options that were given. So the data cutoff is last summer. Median follow-up now is 1.5 years. This is the baseline demographics. And you can, as with all of these studies, it's imperative that you see balance, and in fact, we do. Intriguingly, the majority of patients in both arms were female, which is unusual for lung cancer trials. By definition, they had adenocarcinoma predominantly. Most are former smokers. That is true of most lung cancer trials. They're not current smokers. And you can see an even distribution of PD-L1 status, whether it was 0, 1 to 49%, or 50%, or higher, about a third each. Response rate significantly improved. This is an update, so we've gone from 28 to 32% in the control arm, and have inched up in the pembro arm as well with a p-value of 0.0029. Compared to the initial analysis, there were 3 additional responses observed, 1 in the pembro arm, 2 in the control, and 1 CR in each arm. So very little difference from the original analysis, and a similar pattern of response across PD-L1 distribution. Note that 50% of the pembro arm responses remain ongoing as of last summer, 40% in the control arm. PFS, more mature data, for the Pembro arm, it is 19 months. When I started out in the 80s, median survival, not PFS, was maybe 6 to 8 months, so we were clearly making some headway in this disease. The control arm doing as well or better than it has done historically, with a median PFS of 8.9 months, hazard ratio of 0.54 with a p-value of 0.0067. So these data have stood the test of time with that PFS benefit persisting, if not expanding. The original survival shown here, hazard ratio of 0.9. You can see very little separation in the curves. This is the update as of presentation last summer by Vali Papadimitrakopoulou. You note that the hazard ratio has dropped to 0.69. You're starting to see some separation beyond 12 to 15 months. P-value is still not significant. And this is the current analysis. And we actually have a median for the control arm of nearly 21 months, again, far exceeding historic observations. Median not reached in the Pembro arm clearly looks to exceed 2 years or more. Hazard ratios drop further to 0.59, and the p-value looks significant, 0.03, but it is not. This is a one-sided analysis. The threshold has to be 0.025 or less, so clearly trending, but not quite there. Again, it's a randomized phase 2 trial. If we look at exposure, median exposure is actually double in the Pembro arm for duration of therapy over 10 months compared to 4.9 months. And we look at toxicity, somewhat higher, but not egregiously so, 41% grade 3 or higher toxicity for Pembro compared to 29% for chemo alone. No major differences in discontinuation rates due to AEs or death rates. And these are the treatment-related AEs with of any grade, so 1% or higher with the incidence range of 15% or higher. And by and large, somewhat more toxicity in the Pembro arm, although the vast majority of this is grade 1 or 2. So you see a bit more fatigue, some GI toxicity. Intriguingly and paradoxically, with no explanation, we seem to observe less anemia in the Pembro arm. That may just be a fluke. Some anorexia, some LFT elevations, and some slight increase in neutropenia. So no additional fatal AEs, one additional AE leading to discontinuation each group, and really no grade 5 AEs due to immune etiology. So the summary shown here, hazard ratio for OS continues to improve over time. In this analysis, 0.59 with the total median follow-up of over a year and a half. Hazard ratio was originally 0.9 in the primary analysis. So this incremental survival benefit, though it is not statistically significant, continues despite a high crossover rate, over 75%, to PD-1 or PD-L1 therapy in the control arm. And we observe as well significant improvements in response and PFS that were already seen in the primary analysis. Manageable safety profile, this has become my go-to regimen in non-squamous patients without genetic aberrations, and clearly an effective and tolerable treatment option, a standard, not necessarily the standard, but certainly a standard of care that's been FDA approved. I think most of you are aware of the follow-up phase 3. This is 189. Basically the same study design, PEM-CARBO plus or minus PEMBRO with crossover in the control arm, originally statistically geared for PFS, later for both PFS and OS. A 2-to-1 randomization, so one major difference as opposed to the original randomized phase 2. Same eligibility criteria, no pre-existing EGFR ALK, good performance status, no contraindications to checkpoint inhibitors, with stratifications based really on smoking status, which platinum was used, CARBO or CIS, and PD-L1 status. So study completed accrual exactly a year ago, and all we know, as Dr. Baines has said, is a significant PFS and OS improvement as of 3 weeks ago. So stay tuned. Going to be presented to a meeting soon. I don't know if you can divulge where that is. Not yet. Okay, so, but soon. So one of the dilemmas that comes up, how do I deal with somebody with more than 50% expression? Do they get Pembro alone or the triplet? So you can make arguments both ways. We've no head-to-head comparison of Pembro versus the triplet, so that's certainly a rationale for just going with the single agent. KEYNOTE-021G was relatively small, randomized phase 2. even now, no significant survival advantage, so can be justified. The phase 3 results from the confirmatory 189 are not yet known overall and specifically in this cohort. Clearly less toxicity for a single agent and less expense. Remember, pemetrexed is still on patent. We're talking about a very expensive regimen in aggregate. And it certainly does not preclude the option of going to PEM-carbo with or without bevacizumab at the time of progression in that population. On the other hand, you can make a cogent argument for the triplet. We have a high response rate, 80%, which I didn't show you, but it was part of the initial presentation as the Lancet Oncology paper. The 20 patients had more than 50% expression. It was 80% compared to 45% in 024. And the primary progression rate, these are the folks who at their first scan have disease progression, was only 3%. We don't typically see that in lung cancer. You go back to studies in the 80s, 90s, even the early aughts, it was 10, 20, 30, 40%. So we're avoiding the turmoil of progression. PFS exceeds a year, and the 17-month update is now up to 19 months. It's going to be updated further. We'll see whether that changes. And OS is clearly trending. It may not be significant, but 0.03 is a pretty impressive p-value, and the hazard ratio is 0.59, again, in the context of a randomized phase 2 trial. And of course, now we know 189 is positive, so presumably, statistically, it's met that criteria. What about other histologies? Well, here's the companion trial in squamous. Basically, similar design, but using a different platform regimen. Taxane, could be NAB-PAC or paclitaxel with carboplatin plus or minus pembro. Note that the crossover is offered in the control arm. And I believe this trial is finished accrual and hopefully will be reported next 6 to 12 months, we'll see. I don't have any inside data or knowledge about that, but you are going to witness a tsunami, literally, of studies of this sort reaching maturity in the next 1 to 2 years. And it's going to generate a lot of excitement, but also quite a lot of confusion. So I will end here. I think we have plenty of time for additional questions. As I said, I'll be happy to answer anything in inside the chest, not outside it. Thank you. Wow, you guys know everything there is to know about lung cancer. There's somebody in the back. Yes. Whoa. So pembro plus Avastin plus chemo, is there such a study? I don't. There's a phase 2. 021 actually, one of the cohorts, I think it was cohort B, was PAC, carbo, bev, and pembro. It's only about 25 patients. Response rate, as it's been with all of these combinations, was fairly impressive. I think in the 50 to 60% range, again, independent of PD-L1 status. PFS and OS in that small cohort was good. That'll probably be, I know it's being written up and it'll probably be published soon. Is there a phase 3 trial that's actually testing? I don't think so. But of course, we do have the IMpower 150 trial, which did use PAC Carbo Bev as a platform, plus or minus Atezo. And that was presented at ESMO and has shown a significant PFS advantage. It looks like survival may also be positive, but it's not mature enough so far. But we're seeing about a 5-month difference in overall survival from 14 months and change to about 19 months. I think a big question comes up when we're talking about Bev, which is still on patent, Pembro, which obviously is on patent, PEM, which is on patent. I clearly doubt whether our system can afford that. Yes.
Dr. Langer, thank you for an excellent talk. Some experts would believe that an IO-IO combination is preferred versus an IO chemo. I assume you're in the latter bucket. But how would you approach selecting the therapy for a patient as the director of thoracic oncology at the University of Pennsylvania? And how, if you were in a community setting, select your therapy.
I think you've highlighted one of the big debates that is ongoing and has certainly gotten even more pointed, I wouldn't say rancorous, but maybe rancorous, particularly with the 227 results. Of course, we haven't seen those either, but PFS advantage for ipi-nivo in high tumor mutation burden. Remember, that's probably less than 50% of patients compared to standard chemo. So I think, as you can probably guess from my talk, I'm still in the chemo camp. Chemo is a standard platform. It seems to combine quite well with immunotherapy, particularly with PD-1, PD-L1 inhibitors. The data we're seeing here are really, compared to our historic controls, is outstanding. Ipi-nivo is a tough combination. I'm sort of grateful I don't treat melanoma. I don't have to deal with ipi, typically. Of the two checkpoint inhibitors, ipi is far more toxic than pembro or nivo or atezo. We do use the combination a lot in small cell. It does have NCCN approval, and we've been getting it reimbursed. That's really the main issue. And I think it remains to be seen how that's going to stack up versus a chemo checkpoint inhibitor combination. I'm sure there are studies of that sort ongoing. I can't cite them offhand. But for now, at least, until I see the actual data, and particularly see survival data, which we have for chemo pembro, which we do not yet have for ipi-nivo, I'm still going to be in the chemo IO camp. I think IO-IO combinations are of particular import in the second line setting. It may not be the IOs you're thinking of, but it might be some other IO. There's at least 50 separate agents that are being looked at in combination with PD-1 and PD-L1, some of which have already been reported out. So epacadostat, an IDO inhibitor, for instance, been looked at in phase 1 and phase 2, and there are a number of ongoing phase 3 studies now, the ECHO trials, that are looking at single agent PD-1 plus or minus epacadostat, and you're going to see similar trials completing accrual and probably being reported out in the next year or two, but probably predominantly in the second-line setting. It's open for discussion in the front-line setting. Certainly, pembro single agent 50% or higher is a target. So the same sort of studies can be conducted there, and there are ongoing trials that are looking at non-cytotoxic. One example is pembro plus or minus ramucirumab in 50% or higher. I believe that study is ongoing. I don't know how well it's accruing. But you're only talking about 30% of our overall population that has high levels of PD-L1. I think another big question is, how is TMB going to factor into all of this? Will it supplement PD-L1 testing? Will it supplant it? The jury's out. But I think clearly it looks like it's going to be a player in how we sort out our patients. And then the corollary question is, if we see a benefit for chemo and pembro across the board, regardless of PD-L1 status, do you need to do PD-L1? I think we still do, both intellectually and practically. And remember, when we're testing for PD-L1, it's not that alone. We're also looking for the genetic markers. We're sending that tissue off simultaneously for many different tests. So it'd be impractical to separate all that. They're doing it more and more, thank God. Many of us, frankly, because of the 024 study, the study that showed a benefit for pembro versus chemo, we finally enacted reflex testing at our own institution, where I didn't have to order it. The pathologist would automatically do these tests, much as they've done for HER2 or ERPR for the last 30 years. I mean, that did not occur with lung cancer. And so there were delays. The tissue would be biopsied. We'd see these patients as oncologists, and nothing was done yet. We'd have to put in an order and then set the clock back another 2 to 4 weeks. These patients are sick. They can't wait 2 to 4 weeks to start treatment. So it's imperative that the testing be done quickly and efficiently. Thank you.
Thanks.
The annual Immuno-Oncology 360 Conference bridges clinical, scientific, and business developments in IO to provide a genuine 360-degree perspective, so as a community we can drive faster advancements to eradicate cancer. For more information about the event, visit www.io360summit.com. Thanks for listening.